Good. So now everyone's sitting down mostly. So, as usual on a Friday night, I try to pick up some threads of questions which people have asked, things which have been in the mind for the last week or two, and emails of people asking me to give talks on this and that. And I'm going to start off with an interesting question, but don't get too excited that what I'm going to say at the beginning is not really the subject of the talk. I'm going to see if I can dive into this subject a little bit deeper. But wonderful president's husband sent me an email a few days ago trying to find out the answer to the question, is Buddhism a religion? And other people keep asking that question. And yeah, it qualifies as a religion when people look at it. So many people have Buddhist teachings as their way of life, guides them, gives them the spiritual dimension to their life. And it's now, besides many of the other major religions of our human race, it's old, it's got its ceremonies and stuff. And the sort of Buddhism you see is a very, very pure, very original and very simplified version, which is as it should be. Somebody asked me a question before I came in here, which is a very beautiful question. If the Buddha was alive today, an Australian from Perth, how would he teach? That's what they asked me. Made a mistake straight away. Why should you say he? How would she teach? Who knows? Could it be a female? And the answer is, it would be pretty much the same teachings, but just packaged in a different form, as the packaging has to change from age to age. But the principles will remain the same. And it's those principles which define this thing called Buddhism. Is it a science, as somebody asked me? Science? I was a scientist before, and what goes by the word science these days is far less scientific than Buddhism. I gave a talk some years ago somewhere, I can't remember where, when I say Buddhism the only real science. One of the problems with science is it's always peer-reviewed. And scientists say that's a wonderful thing which means that you can trust science because other people look at your results. But who are the people who look at the results of scientists? Other scientists. It's like having the West Australian Police Force reviewed by members of the West Australian Police Force. It's like the Liberal government doing a review of its economic policy when other members of the government are the ones who reviews it. In looking at it that way, peer review is the problem with, say, Lehman Brothers a few years ago. Members of Lehman Brothers reviewing themselves. You can't really trust that. It would be wonderful if scientists could have someone outside of themselves, like religious leaders, doing the peer review. That would challenge not just results, but the whole way of thinking. Now this is something which Buddhism does. It challenges you. And that was originally what science was supposed to do. Okay, here we go. Never expected to talk on this, but there was, I think it was Francis Bacon, 300, 400 years ago. He was a person, he started this Royal Society, I think under Henry VIII, I think. And he wanted to try and get science started. And he always said it had to be on the way of disproof. You can't prove anything in this world. I would say, like, Loch Ness Monster. Does a Loch Ness Monster exist? Just because you haven't found it yet doesn't prove it doesn't exist. It might be hiding. But you can't prove something exists. Prove it doesn't exist. You can only prove it does exist. You can't prove something is right. You can only prove that it's wrong. And that was always the disproof. So the whole of science was put up something, some idea, some theory, and do your damnedest to try and disprove it. These days, apparently, though, the science doesn't do that. They have a theory, and everyone tries to prove it, not disprove it. Because if you keep disproving all these theories, you'll have no funding from the government, from you guys. We don't get any funding at all. That's why we're free of all this care, you know, whether we say the right thing or the wrong thing. We experiment and find out for ourselves, which is one of the fundamental parts which makes Buddhism not really a religion, but something totally opposite to the original meaning of religion. Because, as people pointed out to me years ago, yeah, Buddhism is a religion as far as most people are concerned. But the original word religion, it actually came from a Latin word which means binding you to something. You may, in medicine, ligature, tie, it ties you to something. And it comes from that same root, to tying you to a belief system, to a doctrine, to a catechism, to a series of beliefs which you have to say, these are the ones which I believe in, and then you become a Catholic or a Muslim or whatever. It is a bond. So in that sense, Buddhism just breaks all bonds. It doesn't go for tying yourself to a particular set of beliefs, like a science. It is totally destructive. I know they always say that extremist Islam is destructive, but they just blow up buildings and people. We blow up ideas. Which is another way of looking at these things. Your ideas, my ideas, to challenge you to the very, very core. That's why Buddhism has always been perhaps the most subversive of all the religions. Because it breaks the whole idea of religion and tying yourself to things. Instead of bondage, tying you to stuff, things, the idea of Buddhist so-called religion or anti-religion is actually freedom. And this idea of freedom is something which the human mind has tried to grapple with and understand. As I did when I was young, I wanted to be free. And I was reminded by someone who came on my meditation retreat, which Cecilia was mentioning, why I wasn't here the last two Fridays. I was teaching in Jhana Grove, and there was a guy there who was about my age. And he also was, in 1970, at the Isle of Wight Festival. Anyone my age in Europe went to these rock festivals, and that was one of the famous ones. And I went in there with my green velvet trousers, because I was I didn't smoke any marijuana, but I was sort of a hippie into rock music. I had my hippie beads and my green velvet trousers because I was making a statement. I was rebelling. I was being different. Until I got there and found out half the other men were wearing green velvet trousers as well. It's just another uniform. And this guy, apparently, he was wearing black velvet trousers. So he confirms, you know, that we were wearing uniforms. But that whole idea of, like, thinking for yourself, being original, just trying to break the bonds of hierarchies, stereotypes, things which you feel are restricting your ability to be alive. I think you all know what I mean, each one of you. You know, whether you're a woman and you can't actually be in a man's world, you know, reach your full potential. You know, you're an indigenous, you've got the wrong race, the wrong colour in the wrong place, the wrong age, just the wrong upbringing. You feel so restricted by all the things which happened to you in your past. Accidents of birth, unfortunate upbringings, injuries, whatever it is, we feel to be so restricted by that. And the whole point of freedom is actually finding this ability just to be able to soar. Another reason why I wanted to give a talk like this today was that there was one woman talking to me today. She's here, so please excuse me. That she was thinking she needed to be more grounded in life. And I looked at her and said, actually, I don't want to be more grounded. She said she was like a leaf on a tree which had been blown all over the place. And my feeling is to be a leaf which is free from the tree, which is not tied down, which can blow anywhere it wants, and can actually soar the winds of life. Like I remember when I did my 6 months silent retreat, never saw any human being for 6 months, but I saw this family of eagles, which were nesting just maybe a kilometre away, and I saw the first flight they had with their baby, their young one, these two big eagles and a tiny one following them, teaching it sort of how to fly, you know, taking turns just going behind just to, you know, encourage it along. And it was soaring on just the gusts of wind. We were on the edge of the hills, the scarp. There's many beautiful gusts there which they can soar on and fly and enjoy the beautiful sun. No, it's actually during the winter time, but the beautiful afternoons. And I looked, because I had time. I was on retreat, had no duties at all, didn't have to come into Nala Mara, didn't have to do anything. I was totally free just to enjoy the day and see and to celebrate and admire the freedom of these great birds just in the forest above Serpentine. And that to me was freedom. I remember the simile and metaphor someone gave me such a long time ago. They said they used to go hot air ballooning. And I don't know if any of you have ever gone hot air ballooning. I never have. But they said that once you're up there, you know, above the ground, it may be a windy day, but it doesn't matter, from whatever direction the wind is blowing, you never feel it. Because you go totally with the wind. Planet Earth. It's peaceful. It's silent. You feel no resistance. No way you can go anywhere. Change course. You flow totally with the wind of that day. And that to me is a great simile of just what freedom promises you. It doesn't mean that you have a propeller or a jet engine on that aircraft. How noisy those things are. You just go with the wind. And I told the lady that it's good to take a credit card with you so you can get back again wherever you land after a long journey. You don't know where you're going, but who cares? Just the journey is freedom, it's beautiful, it's joy, it's like being a bird again. So those are sorts of the freedoms which give me an idea that what this Buddhism is, it's not being tied down. You know, which is like, you know, the religions which believe in a god or a dogma or a book or something which ties you down to that book. And you know, sometimes I feel great sort of sympathy and sorrow, you know, for some of the people of religion. I was just talking to someone yesterday afternoon. They were Greek Orthodox, I won't say again who they were. Yes. And they said that the Greek Orthodox Church had just had investigated and found out that doing yoga was against their creed. So they asked people not to do yoga anymore. Oh, come on, you guys. But the local priest over here, born in Australia, just said, oh, crikey, what am I supposed to do? The hierarchy says you're not supposed to do yoga. And then sort of, I know it's okay. So he tried to find a compromise. So do yoga, but don't do too much. And this is what happens when you have hierarchies, when you have a religion which ties you to bosses. One of the things which I like, this isn't practice, it should be practice. One of the reasons I really appreciated Buddhism is just before the Buddha passed away, when people asked him who will take over the religion, who will lead it once you're gone, he said, no one. He said, the teachings, that's what will guide you, but no one. Boss. And traditionally, originally, this is a no-boss religion. I'm not the boss. The Dalai Lama's not the boss. We don't have a boss. People have tried to make bosses. It's just human nature. You have something which is beautiful and free, and people try and control it. If you want to know what I mean, as soon as somebody climbs to the top of the mountain, what do? Put a flag on it. They can't leave anything alone. They want to own it. I claim this out this prop for Australia, put an Australian flag on, and the Kiwi goes there afterwards, throws the Australian at Kiwi. Whatever. And after the flag, what comes next? The restaurant. With a helipad for people who are too fat and lazy to walk. That's what they do to beautiful pristine mountains. Just like what we do to beautiful pristine religions like Buddhism. Just we make a restaurant out of it, put a flag on it, belongs to us. And we own it, and then we control it. Now, do you know the difference between controlling and freedom? All the time, we have people trying to control people's spirituality. And the Buddha said, no, we won't be any boss, just the teachings, that will be your boss from now on in. But still, we have organizations which try to control, tell you what to do, and if you misbehave, if you think differently than the boss, then you get excommunicated. Not just excommunicated, all sorts of rotten things, you go to hell. If anyone questions what I say tonight, be careful. The last person who questioned this, oh, you wouldn't believe what happened to them. They use fear to try and control you. And the consequences, you will burn in hell if you don't believe in me. And of course, that is, unfortunately people believe that. And it means it's control, there's no freedom anymore. You are controlled. That's not the purpose of what Buddhism is, an anti-religion, not to bind you to things, but to free you. And some people say, okay Ajahn Brahm, what about you? You're not free. You can't go and watch the latest episode of Star Wars, if I was interested in it anyway, which I ain't. You can't go to the pub and have a nice drink of an evening. You can't go dancing. Come on, look at me. Even if I could, I shouldn't. Except for belly dancing. If you do belly dancing, you need a belly, so I qualify for that. But I wouldn't inflict that on anybody, that's torture, and I'm too compassionate to do things like that to you. But anyway, what is this actual freedom? You know, it's a weird thing, that as soon as I became a monk, I felt so free. It was weird. A monk. A monk has to live in a monastery. There's so many rules. Hundreds of rules, which you can't break. You're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do that, you're not supposed to do anything else. But it felt so free, because then I started to understand what freedom really is. It's freedom from the control of your desires. Totally different idea of freedom in Buddhism. Are you really free? Can you walk past that shop? Even though you would like to buy that, say, no, I don't need it. I won't buy it. Can you walk past the Hungry Jacks when you really like hamburgers? You walk past, you can smell it when you're hungry. You can almost taste it. You can almost feel it in your mouth. You can almost be chewing it. That counts for anything. If you like sort of vegan food, the best vegan restaurant in Perth, can you actually walk past and smell it? And, you know, for those of you who are from sort of Asia, you know, the noodles. Can you actually visualize noodles now? Steaming. And can you almost see it just in the bowl and just coming in? You see just how desires, how many of you are salivating now? You're not free. You're controlled by desires. So it's a wonderful thing which I learned, that real freedom, and the purpose why Buddhism is a spiritual path, because it celebrates freedom, and it realizes what freedom truly is. Now, of course, many of you come here, you've got problems. Problems from the past, fears from the future, had a difficult life. Oh, all sorts of things have happened to you, had addictions, alcohol, drugs. You had difficult relationships and it's all fallen apart and you feel like killing yourself. You've had sort of abuse as a child. You haven't made it in this world when everyone else you think is making it in this world. You've got so much baggage from the past. And you come here to be free from that baggage. Imagine what that must be like. Imagine you can sit here and all that past finish with, like all the dirty dishes of your past have all been washed, put away, stacked, they're not dirty anymore. Imagine what that must be like. Freedom. For me, the first time I tasted some freedom, silly example, but it was very powerful for me. At school, high school, finished all my homework. Had no more homework, no more assignments to do. We had an afternoon off school. And I remember just going out of the school. Had nothing to do, no assignments, no pressure on me at all. Even as a 14-year-old, you have pressure. Don't think, oh, being school days are the happiest days of your life. They ain't. There's a lot of work and pressure and trouble. But anyway, that afternoon I felt totally free. So I walked out of the school, I could go any direction I wanted. And nothing was compelling me at all. And I just took one step at a time. And I had no plans. Didn't know how I was going to spend the afternoon. Where I was going to go, which way I was going to walk. That sense of freedom was probably the first time I got some idea of just how controlled, compelled, forced our life can be. You have so many places you have to be, so many deadlines you have to meet, so many duties you have to do, and so many people you have to please. And one of those is yourself. And now I didn't have to please anybody. My teacher were already happy, they'd already been pleased, done the homework. Didn't have to get home to another 3 or 4 hours. I was totally free from all compulsion and pressure. Just like I was saying in the meditation, all the strain in your body, pulling it this way, squashing it that way, all the pressures and the stress, the pull of you having to do something were totally released. You felt so free. Just like the hot air balloon floating in the sky. You felt no wind on you at all, no force, no desire, no compulsion, nothing at all. Totally free. And that's why Buddhism is not a religion in the sense of it binding you to something. It's the opposite. It unties you from things. It unties you from the past. Don't worry if you're not untied yet. It happens. It's only a matter of time until all that past just recedes and fades away. How it falls off the radar. It's not there anymore. You don't remember it. It's gone. And I'm not talking about Alzheimer's. Dementia's got lots of good things about it. Honestly, I remember my mother had dementia. And one of the cutest things of going to visit my mother with dementia. And you know, this says what a wonderful world it would be if people had dementia in this area. Other areas not, but you know, in different areas of dementia. And that particular time, I went there with my brother to in this locked ward, because if she got out, she wouldn't know how to get back. She'd be wandering around all over the place. And so went to see her. And as soon as I went into this ward with my brother remarked, seeing my mother, "That's not her dress. She's wearing somebody else's clothes." Because my mother would be my brother would make sure she's always got new dresses or new stuff to wear. He was always really good at that. I was here in Australia. So he was in England looking after my mother. And as soon as he said that, he called and said, "Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen this before." Because imagine, people in the dementia ward, they forget who owns what. So they just share. It's beautiful. Now she goes in someone's room. "Oh, that's a nice dress." She puts it on. Someone goes in my mother's room. "Oh, that's nice. I'll put that one on." There's no sense of ownership. Imagine if the whole world was like that. We wouldn't have so many, you know, shops and clothes. You wouldn't have any bills, no credit card, because we don't need to buy things. We share everything. If you like it, you put it on. Now, I thought that was really cool. So, can't we have dementia on ownership? Who owns what? You see a nice mansion in Peppermint Grove, you just go and stay in there. No one knows. You don't remember. And people who live in it, most of the time, they don't remember if they own it or not. They come over to Nottama and go in one of these government houses, falling apart. They go stay in there. Why not? Now, wouldn't that be a wonderful world? You wouldn't have to worry about locking your car because there's always one car out there. That'll do. go have in that one. You see how much freedom that is? No ownership, sharing and trust. There's always something for everybody. There'll be no more rich people, no need to be rich. You need some money? Oh, there's some money in the purse over there. You just take it because you don't know it's yours. You don't remember how much money you had in your purse, so how can you say it's stealing? I don't know. And so you go to somebody else's wallet if you need something. It's an interesting idea, isn't it? Because what that actually does, it takes away a lot of the stuff of our society. Just thinking what Ajahn Chah once said. I said this once in UWA, and there's people were howling afterwards, and there's indigenous people in the back saying, "Yeah, yeah, go Ajahn Chah." Because he once said the story that he made a prediction for the future. He said, "One day they're going to run out of metal to make coins. No more metal left. Because they mined it all." And so they'd also run out of paper for banknotes. So what would they use for money? He said, "No paper, no metal." So he said, "What they'll use for money is little pellets of chicken shit." And so people work so hard and try and get promotions so they could get more chicken shit at the end of the month. And then they'd all be so proud of how much chicken shit they'd saved. They'd have a big safe full of chicken shit under the floor in their house. And they'd go to the bank, whenever they put their credit card in, a lot of chicken shit would come out. And they take the chicken shit to Coles and at the checkout. You know, how much chicken shit that? 1,000. So it's 600. So they have to count all the pieces of chicken shit really fast. And Forbes magazine would have this big list of who's got the most chicken shit in the world. The IMF would become the International Manure Fund, not Monetary Fund. Because he was making a great point. What's the difference between coins and chicken shit? It's just metal, you find it in the earth. What's paper? There's no real difference, is there? It's just what we impose, that chicken shit is dirty and smelly, not worth anything. Paper, it's got the watermarks on and all these figures, we believe in that, and so it becomes valuable. So it's a wonderful thing about being free, by challenging stuff, seeing it in a different way. And that's what I really liked, when people really challenged me to see things in a way I'd never seen before. Now that is spirituality. It's not telling you what to believe. It's actually just totally undermining what you already believe and not replacing it. Not replacing it with something different, but letting you see for yourself what's actually happening. You know, you have all these teachings, anatta, dukkha, anatta, and stuff like that, but you've got to see these things. They're just words otherwise. So we see these things for ourselves. We understand what is real freedom. And I already mentioned one time when I felt free, you know, when I was just had nothing to do. Totally free for the afternoon. No compulsion, no duties, no responsibilities, no stuff. I had to do this. I told you how my mother felt free. No ownership. What do you really own? Honestly. You don't own it. You only rent it. Temporarily for 30, 40, 50, 60 years. Honestly, your partner. Do you own her, him? Do you? Of course you don't. Eventually they'll go their own way, you'll go your own way. If it's not beforehand, it's, you know, at Karakata, Fremantle. Those are the two main, Pinneroo, the three main funeral places over here. We always party, so we don't own things. It's a very beautiful thing that we don't own things. Okay, I was going to tell another joke, but here's an old joke. Oh, because people keep complaining, they keep writing in. Why is Ajahn Brahm always telling the old jokes? Okay, here's a new joke. It has nothing to do with the talk this evening. But here we go, because I did test this out. Apparently I never said this 3 weeks ago when I last gave a talk. I hope the guy's right. If he's not, he's in big trouble. It's a religious joke. It's appropriate in a place like this. There was a person who went to an interfaith ceremony. All the leaders of the different faiths were there. And as he was really quite inspired that people were actually doing things together, all these different religions. As he walked out of the big hall, the Christian priest came right up to him and put his hand on his head and said, "By the power of Jesus Christ, today you will walk." And he said, "What's wrong with you? My legs are fine. There's nothing wrong with my legs. I play tennis, I play football, my legs are okay." Did I tell this 3 weeks ago? Now this is the problem with you guys. You don't have dementia. Although someone does, because he assured me that I didn't tell this 3 weeks ago. Okay, what was the other story which I told about a year ago? That's got more. You weren't here? Okay. You want me to tell it? Okay, so don't complain on the internet, okay? This was by public request. "You will walk," he said. "You crazy guy. And I can walk already." And then the rabbi came up. And the rabbi did the same. "By the power of Abraham and all the prophets, today you will walk." And he said, "My legs are fine. Get away from me, you idiot." And what really turned him over the edge was when the Buddhist monk did the same. Buddhist monk came up and said, "By the power of the great compassion, today you will walk." He said, "You're all idiots. My legs are fine. Look, I can walk right now." But when he went out of the hall, his faith in religion was restored. He found his car had been stolen. So that day, he had to walk. Not a bad joke. Even though it was only 3 weeks old. Anyway, now where was I going with freedom? Yes. So, again, one of the most important parts of freedom is don't worry what other people think of you. So if I tell the jokes over and over and over and over again, it's because I don't worry what you think of me. So, totally free to be. How many of you are controlled by your fear of what other people will say about you and think about you? And this is one of the terrible things about our world. We don't give people that freedom. That freedom to be who they are. Because you see it so often that you get in some cultures, gay communities, transgender communities, they get so suppressed because people are afraid of them. They don't embrace them. They don't embrace a person's freedom to be who they are. When they don't, obviously, if you're going to be hurting other people like paedophiles, of course, you know, that has to, you can't allow that because it does harm and hurt other people, impinge upon them in a very, very bad way. But the other stuff, if it's not harming, why not? Why can't we have that sense of freedom? And anyway, you know, if one is really free, especially the freedom from the desires, the cravings, it's wonderful. After a while you find, especially as a Buddhist monk, I said I felt so free once I became a Buddhist monk, even though I had all these rules, because all the rules were actually doing, they were actually making me so I didn't need anything. I didn't want anything. And one of the great moments when this was very, very clear to me, I don't know if you may remember this, as one of the people who was monks with me when I was a young monk. Even though, as a monk, we weren't allowed to receive any money. You give money to the Buddhist society, to the temples, pays off all the debts, and by the way, even though we opened our nuns' monastery the other day, we still need the road to go in there. So any rich people out there, let go, we do need some funds for the road into the nuns' monastery. But anyway, I didn't have any personal money for myself, never do. But what happened one day, that I helped a person, helped this man in Thailand. And he came up to me after and said, "Look, I already give donations to the monastery, but I want something for you. I want to give you something out of gratitude for what you did for me. You really helped me." And he knew one of the loopholes. There's always loopholes in everything. And I know most of them. So this particular loophole was, yes, you cannot give a monk any money, but you can go up to him and say, is there anything you want personally? And you say the amount. And he told me 100 baht, which is about $3 these days. This was about 40 years ago. That's quite a considerable amount of money, 100 baht. What do you want for the amount of 100 baht? And that's actually allowable. And you know, when he asked me that, my mind went blank. I couldn't think of anything. And he was getting impatient. He had a job to go to. And so I came up with an idea. I said, look, leave it with me. I'll tell you tomorrow. Come back the same time. He said, great idea. Okay, 100 baht, whatever you want. So that night, I went back to my hut, and by the light of a candle, honestly, it was on the back of a mosquito coil wrapper. That's the only paper I had. Using a pencil. That's all I had. I read, what do I want? And straight away, I need just a simple ballpoint pen. Didn't have one. Instead of a pencil, kept on breaking. A ballpoint pen, that was my first thing. The next thing was a proper piece of paper. A little exercise book. They're very cheap. An exercise book. And also, writing by a candle. It actually is bad for your eyes. So there's no electricity anywhere around in that part of Thailand at the time. So I said, one of these little oil lanterns, that's what I want next. But the oil lantern, you need matches to light it. And they're always running out, so a box of matches. And a little bit of paraffin for the oil lamp. And then actually when they're talking about lighting, my flashlight was really terrible. And you needed flashlights. There were snakes in that jungle. If you didn't have a flashlight, you're going to get killed by these snakes. Lots of them. And not all the snakes were Buddhist. They would bite you. They certainly weren't vegetarian. So I needed a flashlight. And already I had a rough idea of how much these things costed, and it was already over 100 baht. I didn't have enough now, and all these things were really, really important. And as I started thinking what I should cut off, I started thinking of more things I needed. I did actually have some sandals. You're walking through the forest, and it's not just snakes, there's centipedes and there's ants. Those ants could really hurt. When I first found out about these ants, there was a big procession, as you do over in Buddhist traditions, around stupas on holy days, just like we do a circumambulation here on Waisak Day. And I couldn't believe that. I never really understood the Thai Buddhist tradition, but all the senior monks were dancing. And I thought that was against the rules. And then after the senior monks, I was just ordained, I was just around the back somewhere. After the senior monks dance, then the middle monks dance. It's like those Mexican waves they used to have in the going down the line. And then I started to dance, and I realized why. There's these ants all over the place, and they hurt like hell. They were stinging you. There's the motlin. They really hurt. And you didn't have any shoes on, so that was the dancing monks. You couldn't do anything else. But anyway, I needed shoes. No, seriously, not just because I wanted to look good, to protect my feet. There wasn't enough money. And then the longer I thought, the more stuff I realized I needed. And then I got a great insight. I took that piece of paper and screwed it up, and out of disgust, I threw it away. And when that guy came the next day, I told him, don't ever do that to me again. I was such a happy monk when I had no means to get anything. Because before that time I had no desires, because there's no way to get any desires. But now you gave me an opportunity. All this greed came up, and I realized what desire and wanting were. So being a monk, you have no means to get anything. That's why you're free of desire. So wonderful. I can go past the shop and see, I don't like dresses or shoes, IT stuff, fish and chip shops, all those stuff. You can't get it, so you don't want it. So free. And that's the freedom why people become monks or nuns. So free, nothing to do, no worries. Don't need anything because I can't get it anyway, so you don't even think of it. So it's wonderful freedom from desire and freedom from thinking. How much do you think about how to pay off your mortgage, how you can save up to get another nice car, you know, how you can afford to go overseas on holiday, how you can think of doing this and doing that. That drives you crazy. You guys must be bonkers having to think of all that stuff. Because that's one of the greatest freedoms of all, the freedom from thought. In Buddhism, we don't think our way to enlightenment. We still our mind until there's nothing going on there at all. That's why sometimes, you know, people would knock you on the head and say, "Anyone in there?" And I say, "No." With a smile. And that would really sort of discomfort them because they thought I should be embarrassed. I was just being a Buddhist, that's all. No thinking, nothing going on. It's amazing. If you can stop your thoughts, what would it be like? I'll tell you how it'll be like. This is an old story. I used to tell it on a Saturday afternoon. And I'm going to tell it to you now. It's a story from Taoism. Great religion. This guy, Lao Tzu, was one of the early masters. And he was going on a walk with his disciple in the evening. They had this rule. If you go on a walk with the teacher, you had to keep quiet. Golden rule. No talking at all. Just to be. And as he was going for a walk with the master, they came to the ridge in the mountains, and it was a gorgeous sunset in the mountains. And the student forgot himself, forgot the rule, and blurted out, "What a beautiful sunset." And at that, the master turned around immediately, walked back to the monastery. And when he got back to the monastery, when the master, he kept the rule too, he said, "You broke my rules. So you can never ever, throughout the rest of your life, go on a walk with me." And he was stunned. Just one little break like that, and he was punished for the rest of his life. And this poor young man's friends tried to, you know, to support him and argue his case. "Oh, look, give him a break. He's only young. He's only..." And anyway, they asked, "What's wrong with saying, 'What a beautiful sunset?'" And this is where the great teaching comes. Lao Tzu replied, "When my student said, 'What a beautiful sunset,' he wasn't watching the sunset anymore. He was only watching the words." When you think, "What a beautiful sunset," you're not watching the sunset, you're just watching the thoughts. It's totally different. Next time when you go outside and see the stars at night, and they're gorgeous. Just, you know, especially that living at Serpentine, you go out in the darkness, no lights for a long way. You look up at the stars and they're incredible. You start thinking about it, you can't see them. Thinking, "What a great Milky Way tonight." Then you're not seeing the stars, you're seeing the thoughts. And it's the thoughts which control you. It's the thoughts, "I'm not good enough, I'm really good enough, she's nice, he's terrible, why did he say that to me?" My goodness, some of you are just thinking about events which happened years ago. It's gone, it's past. Why can't you let it go? Because you can't stop thinking. You are controlled by your thoughts. They are your prisoner. And that's one of the reasons why science has got into a dead end. Because they think in only one way. They are imprisoned by one way of thinking. When you stop thinking, you're totally free to go all sorts of ways. New ways, which haven't been gone there before. What was it? Star Trek. Remember Star Trek at the beginning? Because that was my generation. Actually, it still goes on. And I remember the way that they started to, not, that's actually what I remember, said to boldly go where no one has gone before. But they got it wrong. It should have been to boldly go when no one has gone before. Now that would have been smart. You know, actually to explore, you can't do that if you're confined by your thoughts. You've got to be free. In the silence, your mind can see things you can't see through thinking. You can experience the sunset instead of thinking about it. You can experience love peace, freedom. You know them. I'm not thinking them. And the experience is totally different. So that's why here we're teaching you how to open the cell door of thinking and walk outside into silence. That's scary. As I said beforehand, why is it to somebody scary? It's like a person who's been in jail for, how old are you? 40, 50 years? You're actually free in your first few years of life. You could not think, just see, enjoy. But someone taught you somewhere in school, those primary, those grade one teachers. No, they're okay. They taught you how to think. And you lost the art of being silent. Because being silent, not thinking, they said that was being dumb. To me, I said, no, you have great potential, which was deprived by the education system, which only rewards thinking rather than... Actually, there's a few people who actually manage to survive school and just be. Totally don't fit in. Great. What do you mean, fitting in? Everyone fits in. Just don't believe what other people say, and you fit in. You fit into who you are, where you are. You fit into the present moment. Here I am. I fat in. Or like I've been telling people on the retreat. You know that people say to really be succeed in life, you have to arrive. And all these people, if once you make your million, once your business goes, once you get your first yacht, once you get your picture on the glossy magazines, you've arrived. You've arrived, baby. You've arrived. I like saying that. But what does that really mean? Each one of you, you've arrived. You've got to the Buddhist center of Western Australia. So even though those of you looking online, all of you babies online, you've arrived, baby. You've arrived. You're here, okay. That's what I call baby. You're Once you accept yourself as you are, you're free of all this stupid thinking stuff and wanting and craving and desires. So is Buddhism a religion? It's not bound to anything. It's actually totally subversive of thinking. Totally goes in the other direction. That's what the Buddha said. Goes against the current of desire. Totally different direction. That's why it is very challenging. If you want an easy spirituality, go and become a Catholic and get told what to believe. You don't have to do anything then. But if you've got a bit of sense, and if you're going to challenge, if you're not going to think for yourself, you're going to be silent for yourself. Not a free thinker, but a person free of thinking. Someone who can see the stars at night without thinking about them, can enjoy the sunset without having to put a name on it, who can go up to the top of a mountain and walk down without leaving any trace, no flag, no restaurant, who can just be without leaving scars on planet Earth. Now you understand what spirituality is, what Buddhism stands for. A religion? Make your own mind up. Thank you. Very good. Okay. That was an interesting one. So, the joke was the same, but the other thing around it was totally different. Maybe. Okay, we've got a few questions from overseas for those of you. Any questions from the people in the audience here? Yes, Don. Go on. We'll get good questions from you. Okay. Is the Four Noble Truths just another theory, just like science? Or is the Four Noble Truths the undermining of all theories? So I would actually say it's the undermining of all theories, because always about the second noble truth, which is letting go. No, sorry, that's the third noble truth. The wonderful letting go of all cravings, of all things. That letting go business, that was the heart of the Buddha's teachings. So, what actually is this, like Alice in Wonderland, I think it could be Alice with a Looking Glass. The little story of Alice when it got to the square of the Red Queen, and when it got, because the Queen was actually waiting for her messenger to arrive, and instead Alice arrived. And so the Queen said, did you see my messenger on the road? And Alice said, I saw no one on the road. You saw no one? Said the Queen. What good eyes you must have. I can only see someone, but you can see no one. And she asked anybody, the other people there, her attendants, and said, did anybody come before Alice? I said, no one came before Alice. I said, oh yes, she saw him on the road. So no one must come faster than Alice. And Alice said, yeah, no one walks faster than me. Exactly, that's why no one arrived first. And it was always like a play on words about no one meant actually nothing, but it became a someone. So sometimes that's what happens. A nice teaching, which is meant to actually undermine and unravel things, and no one becomes a somebody. It becomes a religion. Okay, good question. It wasn't such a good answer, but anyway, I'm happy. Andrew from Nepal, if one can control one's mind, can one control one's life? You cannot control your mind because it doesn't belong to you, and therefore you can't control your life. You have the myth of controlling your mind, and that's one of the great mistakes people do in meditation, try and control it. There was someone showed me an article, which maybe you can all have a look at. It's in The Guardian, about the dangers of mindfulness. And there is real dangers, because sometimes that people who have predilection to a bit of psychosis or schizophrenia, or they have some great problems from the past, and they meditate the wrong way, in trying to control things, sometimes they get into even worse states of mind. And this has been happening, because a lot of times this mindfulness movement, getting really, really strong, divorced of everything else in Buddhism, has actually got dangers to it. But don't be so worried. Going to a gym has dangers to it. You know, many people break their legs in a gym, or they sprain their ankles. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't go to the gym. Everything in this life has got dangers, but you know, really good gyms will actually have people who can actually spot that coming. You know, you're going too fast. You know, don't push things too hard. So, you know, that's why you have to be aware of those dangers. And the dangers in meditation is people trying to control their mind. And that's what happens. Uh-oh. It's gone blank. Amazing. It's let go. You know what it says on here? It says on my screen here, no attachments. Wow. It says that. That is spooky. So he says that. So I can't get any attachments, so someone else has to do that. But no, be careful. Because that's a lot of times people want to control their mind. And once they control their mind, they try and control others. This is not about control. It's totally different. Letting go. And it's amazing. When you stop controlling your mind, you let it be. Then all of the goals which you try to get by controlling your mind, you get when you let it be. Everything you ever wanted by controlling your mind, peace, happiness, success, you get all of those by not controlling, by letting it be. It's great wisdom of the Buddha. So, and please, don't try and control your life. That is just like putting a jet engine on the hot air balloon. So you can make it go this way and that way. How noisy would that be? Just go, throw, and then you're peaceful. From Lithuania, I am in a local sangha. It is difficult to reach out and teach meditation. How do we grow Buddhism in a country where it is oppressed and marginalized? You don't grow Buddhism. So that's what you do. You don't go out there trying to evangelize and go out and convert everybody. Don't go knocking on the doors of other people's houses, otherwise a dog will attack you. So you don't need to reach out and teach meditation. Just, you know, you get very, very peaceful. Just like, what is it called, the flowers? The bees come to the flowers to get the honey. You don't need to do anything different than that. And so just in my life, I'm quite a well-known teacher now, but I never started out like that. In fact, Singapore girl, you know, she was really, really impressed with my talks, but she was wondering, was I born like this? So she went to monastery at Serpentine, got into the library, and got in the earliest talk which I ever gave, which was recorded. She wanted to, it was about 30 years ago, oh, more than that, 32 years ago when I first came to Perth, and she listened to it. And she came up to me afterwards and said, Ajahn Brahma, I listened to one of the earliest talks you gave here in Perth. It was the worst talk I've ever heard. You grow, you learn. But you know, you give it a try, see what happens, and just this is what happens. So, you just, from Lithuania, just go out there, give a few talks, allow people to walk out, laugh at you, and after a while, you know, you learn. You grow, like everybody else. It's not you to control, it's you to let go and learn. If you try and control, and try and make yourself the greatest teacher in the whole of the world, you'll always stuff up. You just let go and enjoy, see what happens. That's the way to spread Buddhism. Thank you so much. Okay, that's enough for today. Thank you for the two from overseas. And the one... Oh, you got another one? Yeah, go on.
Ajahn Brahm.
Yes.
I'm puzzled about something you said earlier tonight.
Uh-oh.
Offer no resistance to nature.
And okay.
That really struck me. But if one's nature is to... it desires to love... to give love.
Ah, good question.
How do you go against your own nature and not be bound by your desire?
Because if it's love without desire, that's what we call true love. And the obvious example of that, which you know you probably all know off by heart, my father telling me, son, wherever you go in your life, whatever you do, however you turn out, the door of my house, he meant his heart, the door of my heart would always be open to you. That was a love without any desire. He didn't desire me to do well. He didn't desire me to be successful. He didn't desire me and put this pressure on me to please my father. He was saying, pleasing me is not the point. I love you anyway. That's such a beautiful act of love, which at the time I never understood. But I look back upon that. Thank you for teaching me what unconditional love is. Love with no desires. So you can love your kids, you can love your wife, whether she loves you back or not. That's a beautiful thing. And then you love yourself with no strings attached. You stuff up, you make stupid mistakes, you say the same joke you told 3 weeks ago. You're totally at peace with it. So that's what love without desire means. That's your nature. You love nature. Your wife won't always be just exactly what you want. And you won't always be what you should, what you want. But you're more than good enough. So love yourself for who you are. Flow with the nature. Sometimes you're grumpy. Sometimes you are... incredibly wise. Sometimes you're just so stupid. There you are, I am too. So that's life. So just flow with that. Isn't it nice? You don't have to be perfect. You can be you, your own nature. Flow with that. Don't try and Don't try and improve yourself. That's my biggest thing these days. This self-improvement. Anyone who buys a self-improvement book, you are wasting your money. Take it from me. You're good enough. You don't need to be improved. And who are these JoJos who make lots of money on trying to tell you you're not good enough? You are good enough. So anyway, I want to improve those people who write those self-improvement books. Okay, that's enough for the day. Another one.
One more.
Okay, go on.
A controlling person, somebody's trying to control you or assert control over you in some way, just to be with them, or what would
some people are trying to control you or controlling you in some way, refuse to be controlled if you possibly can. So they control you, and if it's just through speech, you've got two ears, one to go in, one to go out. Why do you believe what they say? They're idiots, they're fools. I told you this morning. Remember that great story of Ajahn Chah? Someone calls you a dog, what should you do? Look at your bottom to see if you've got a tail. If you haven't got a tail, you're not a dog, and a problem. So you're not controlled by a person, they call you a dog. Oh, am I? I'm not, okay. Sorry, you got it wrong. So easy. But people try and control you because you still depend upon what other people say to you and think of you for your sense of well-being. Because you depend on other people, well, you have this beautiful sense you've arrived already, you're good enough, you love yourself for who you are, you can make mistakes, you don't mind about that, you're not embarrassed, you just laugh. That way you can't be controlled. So that's one of the things you learn here also, how to be free from the control of others. They can't do it anymore. They can try. It's just fun to see someone trying to control you. Okay, give it a try. But if it's physical stuff, you know, violence, then you have to just run away. Because the physical stuff is dangerous. Okay, can I go now? Okay, let's go.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādhayami suvākkhāto bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.